For that, in this reality, I'll never enter those doors again. He's gone. He's really, truly gone. My bookstore has been lost to me as completely and irrevocably as if the Dark Zone had finally swallowed it up. I'll never own it. I'll never open those diamond-paned cherry doors for business again. I'll never hear my cash register's tiny bell ring or curl up with a cup of cocoa and a book, warmed by a cozy gas fire and the promise of Jericho Barron's eventual return. I'll never banter with him, practice voice, or be tested against pages of the Shisadu. I'll never steal hungry glances when I think he's not looking at me, or hear him laugh or climb the back stairs to my bedroom that's sometimes on the fourth floor and other times on the fifth, where I might lie awake and practice things to say to him, only to end up discarding them all because Barron's doesn't care about words. Only actions. I'll never drive his cars. I'll never know his secrets. Darok takes my arm.
This way.
He turns me around.
Temple Bar.
I feel his eyes on me as he guides me back toward the bookstore. I stop and look up at him. I thought there might be things you needed from the house on LaRue, I say casually. I really don't want to walk past BB&B. I thought we should rally your troops. We've been gone a long time.
There are many places I keep supplies, and my army is always near.
He makes a slicing gesture in the air and murmurs a few words in a language I don't understand. The night is suddenly 20 degrees cooler. I don't have to look behind me to know the Unseelie princes are there, in addition to countless other Unseelie. The night is suddenly thick with dark fae. Even with my volume muted, there are so many, so close to me, that I feel them in the pit of my stomach. Does he keep a contingent of them a mere sift away at all times? Have the princes been hovering all this time, listening for his call, a half-dimension beyond my awareness? I'll need to remember that. I am not walking around Dublin with the princes at my back.
I said I will not let them harm you, Michaela, and I meant it.
I want my spear back. Give it to me now.
I cannot permit that. I saw what you did to Malouche with it.
I said I won't harm you, Darok, and I meant it, I mock. See how that feels? Little hard to swallow, isn't it? You insist that I trust you, but you won't trust me.
I cannot take the risk.
Wrong answer. Should I force the issue and try to take the spear? If I succeed, will he trust me less, or respect me more? When I seek the bottomless lake in my head, I don't bother closing my eyes to do it. I just let them go a little out of focus. I need power, strength, and I know where to find both. With almost no effort at all, I'm standing on a black pebbled beach. It has always been there for me. It always will be. Distantly, I hear Darok speaking to the princes. I shiver. I can't bear the thought of them behind me. Deep in its cavernous depths, the black water churns and begins to bubble. Silvery runes like the ones I encircled myself with on the cliff's edge break the surface, but the water keeps boiling, and I know it's not yet done. There's something more, if I want it. I do. After a few moments, it pushes up a handful of crimson runes that pulse on the inky water like slender, deformed hearts. The bubbling stops. The surface is once again as smooth as black glass. I bend and scoop them up. Dripping blood, they flutter in my fists. Distantly, I hear the Unseelie princes begin to chime, but not softly. It's the sound of broken, jagged crystal scraping against metal. I don't turn to look at them. I know all I need to know. Whatever gift I've been given, they don't like it. My gaze refocuses. Darok looks at me, then down at my hands, and goes still.
What are you doing with those? What were you doing in the Silvers before I found you? Did you enter the White Mansion without me, Michaela?
Behind me, the princes chime louder. It's a cacophony that slices into the soul like a razor, severs tendon and chips bone. I wonder if that's what comes of being fashioned from an imperfect song of making, a melody that can unmake, unsing, uncreate at a molecular level. They hate my crimson runes, and I hate their dark music. I won't be the one to yield. Why? I asked Darok. Is that where the runes I've scooped up came from? What does he know about them? I can't ask him without betraying that, while I have power, I have no idea what it is or how to use it. I raise my fists and open them, palms up. My hands drip thick red liquid. Slender tubular runes twist on my palms. Behind me, the prince's jagged chiming becomes a hellish shriek that even Darok looks rattled by. I have no idea what to do with the runes. I was thinking of the Unseelie princes, that I needed a weapon against them, and they appeared in my mind. I have no idea how I translated them from that dark, glassy lake into existence. I understand no more about these crimson symbols than I did about the silvery ones.
Where did you learn to do that, Mikaela?
Darok demands. I can barely hear him over the princes. How do you plan to merge with the book? I counter. I have to raise my voice to a near yell to make myself heard.
Do you have any idea what those things are capable of?
He demands. I read his lips. I can't hear him. The shrieking behind me rises to an inhuman pitch that pierces my eardrums like ice picks. Give me my spear and I'll put them away, I shout. Darok moves closer, trying to hear me.
Impossible,
he explodes.
My princes will not remain and protect us if you have the spear.
His gaze slides with distaste over the runes in my hands.
Nor with those present.
I think we can take care of ourselves.
What?
He shouts. We don't need them. The ice picks in my ears have begun drilling into my brain. I'm on the verge of a massive migraine.
I do. I am not yet Fae again. My army follows me only because Fae princes lead at my back.
Who needs an army? We're inches apart, shouting at each other, and still the words are nearly lost in the din. He rubs his temples. His nose has started to bleed.
We do. The Seelie are amassing, Mikaela. They too have begun hunting the Shisadu. Much has changed since you were last here.
How do you know? I hadn't seen any handy newsstands in the Silvers while I was in there. He grabs my head, pulls it to his.
I stay informed.
He snarls against my ear. The chiming has become an unbearable orchestra of sounds that the human ear was never meant to hear. My neck is wet. I realize my ears are bleeding. I'm mildly surprised. I don't bleed easily anymore. Haven't ever since I ate Unseelie.
You must obey me in this, Mikaela,
he shouts.
If you wish to remain at my side, dispose of them. Or is it war you wish between us? I thought it was an alliance you sought.
He wipes blood from his lips and cuts a sharp look at the princes. Blissfully, blessedly, the chiming stops. The ice picks through my eardrums vanish. I inhale deeply, gulping clean, fresh air greedily, as if it might wash my cells clean of the stain from the prince's horrific symphony. My relief is short-lived, however. As abruptly as the hellish music stopped, my shoulders and arms are freezing, and I think sheets of ice might crack and drop away if I move. I don't need to turn my head to know that the princes have sifted into position, one on my left, one on my right. I feel them there. I know their inhumanly beautiful faces are inches from mine. If I turn my head, they will look into me with those piercing, mesmerizing, ancient eyes that can see beyond where the human soul is, that can see into the very matter that comprises it, and can take it apart piece by piece. Regardless of how much they despise my runes, they're still ready to take me on. I look at Darok. I'd wondered what his reaction would be if I tried to take the spear. I see a look in his eyes now that was not there a short time ago. I am both a greater liability than he knew and a greater asset. And he likes it. He likes power, both having it and having a woman who has it. I despise walking with Unseelie princes at my back. But his comment about the Seelie amassing armies, my ignorance about the runes I hold in my hands, and the icy dark face sandwiching me make compelling arguments. I tilt my head, toss my dark curls from my eyes, and look up at him. He likes it when I use his name. I think it makes him feel like he's with Alina again. Alina was soft and southern to the core. We southern women know a thing or two about men. We know to use their name often, to make them feel strong, needed, as if they have the final say even when they don't. And to always, always keep them believing they won the best prize in the only competition that will ever matter on the day we said, I do. If we get into a battle, Darok, will you promise to return my spear so I can use it to help defend us? Will you permit that? He likes those words. Help defend us. And permit. I see it in his eyes. A smile breaks across his face. He touches my cheek and nods.
Of course, Michaela.
He looks at the princes, and they are no longer beside me. I'm uncertain how to return the runes. I'm not sure they can be returned. When I toss them over my shoulders at the princes, they make sounds like exploding crystal goblets as they sift hastily to avoid them. I hear the runes steam and hiss as they hit pavement. I laugh. Darok gives me a look. I am behaving, I reply sweetly. You can't tell me they didn't have that coming. I'm getting better at reading him. He finds me amusing. I wipe my palms on my leather pants, trying to get rid of the bloody residue from the runes. I try my shirt, but it's no use. The red discoloration has set. When Darok takes my hand and leads me down the alley between Baron's books and baubles and Baron's garage, which houses the car collection I used to covet, I don't look to either side. I keep my gaze trained straight ahead. I've lost Alina, failed to save Christian, killed Baron's, and becoming intimate with my sister's lover. I hurt Danny to drive her away, and now I've teamed up with the Unseelie army. Eyes on the prize. There's no turning back. 10. Snow begins to fall, carpeting the night in a soft white hush. We march across it, a stain of Unseelie, stomping, crawling, slithering toward Temple Bar. There are casts behind me that I've seen only once before, the night Darok brought them through the dolmen. I have no desire to inspect them any more closely than I did that night. Some of the Unseelie aren't so bad to look at. The Rhino boys are disgusting, but they don't make you feel dirty. Others? Well, even the way they move makes your skin crawl, makes you feel slimy where their eyes linger. As we pass a street lamp, I glance at a flyer, drooping limply on it. The Danny Daly, 97 Days AWC. The headline brags that she killed a hunter. I put myself in Danny's head to figure out the date. It takes me a minute, but I get it, after the walls crashed. I perform a rapid calculation. The last day I was in Dublin was January 12th. 97 days from Halloween, the night the walls crashed, is February 5th. Which means I've been gone at least 24 days, probably longer. The flyer was faded, worn by the elements. Much more snow, and I'd never have seen it. However long I've been gone, Dublin hasn't changed much. Although many of the street lamps that were ripped from the concrete and destroyed have been replaced, and the broken lights repaired, the power grids are still down. Here and there, generators hum, dead giveaways of life barricaded in buildings or holed up underground. We pass the red facade of the Temple Bar of the Bar District. I glance in. I can't help myself. I loved the place, BWC, before the walls crashed. Now it's a dark shell with shattered windows, overturned tables and chairs, and papery husks of human remains. From the way they're piled, I know the patrons were crammed inside, huddled together when the end came. I remember the way the Temple Bar looked the first time I saw it, brightly lit with people and music spilling from open doors into the cobbled streets of the corner beyond. Guys had whistled at me. I'd forgotten my grief over Alina for a blessed second or two. Then, of course, hated myself for forgetting. I can almost hear the laughter, the lilt of Irish voices. They're all dead now, like Alina and Barons. I remember spending the long week before Halloween walking the streets of Dublin for hours on end, from dawn till dusk, feeling helpless, worthless for all my supposed she-seer skills. I wasn't sure any of us would survive Halloween, so I'd tried to cram as much living into those last days as possible. I'd chatted up street vendors and played backgammon with toothless old men who spoke a version of English so heavily distorted by dialect and gums that I'd understood only every fifth word. But it hadn't mattered. They'd been delighted by a pretty girl's attention, and I'd hungered for paternal comfort. I'd visited the famous tourist hotspots. I'd eaten in dives and slammed back shots of whiskey with anyone who'd do them with me. I'd fallen in love with the city I couldn't protect. After the Unseelie had escaped their prison and savaged her, dark, burned, and broken, I'd been determined to see her rebuilt. Now I longed only to replace her.
Do you sense it, Michaela?
Darok asks. I've been keeping my Shisir senses as closed as possible. I'm tired and have no desire to find the Shisadu, not until I know everything he knows. I open my senses warily and turn the volume up to a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10. My Shisir senses are picking up the essence of countless things, Faye, but none of them is the Shisadu. No.
Are there many Fae?
The city is crawling with them.
Light or dark court?
It doesn't work like that. I can only pick up Fae, not their allegiance or caste.
How many?
I adjust the volume to 3.5. A tenth this much Fae in close proximity used to have me holding my stomach and trying not to puke. Now I feel charged by it. More alive than I want to be. They're on all sides of us, in 2s and 3s. They're above us, on the rooftops and in the skies. I don't get the feeling that they're watching us, more that they're watching everything. Are they, too, hunting my book? I'll kill them all. It's mine.
Hundreds?
He presses. Thousands, I correct.
Organized.
There is one group to the east that is considerably larger than the others, if that's what you're asking.
Then east we go,
he says. He turns to the princes and barks a command. They vanish. I voice a growing suspicion. They're not really gone, are they? They never are when you send them away.
They remain close, watching but unseen. A sift away with more of my army.
And when we find this group of Fae, I press.
If they are Unseelie, they are mine.
And if they are Seelie?
Then we will drive them from Dublin.
Good. The less Fae in my way, the better. Few have ever seen the Seelie, save the rare mortals stolen away and kept at the Fae court, and, of course, barons, who once spent a great deal of time there, sleeping with a princess before killing her and pissing off Valain for all eternity. I've seen thousands of Unseelie, but until now, even I, Shisir extraordinaire, have seen only a single Seelie. I'd begun to wonder why. In the dark hours of the night, I'd wondered if maybe he was the only one left, if he was hiding something, if perhaps he wasn't Seelie at all, despite evidence supporting his claim. Seeing him as he is now, all my doubts evaporate. Here are the Seelie. They've finally gotten off their asses and started paying attention to the mess they've made of my world. I guess they couldn't be bothered before now. Even filled as I am with hatred for all Fae, I can't deny that Valain looks like an avenging angel, charging down from heaven to set my world back on its axis and clean this whole mess up. Radiant, golden and mesmerizing, he leads an army of angels. Tall, gracefully muscled, they stand shoulder to shoulder with him, filling the street. Stunning, velvety skinned, dusted with gold, they are so chillingly exquisite that I have a hard time looking at them. And I'm immune from having been Priya, a Fae sex addict. They are otherworldly, divine. There are dozens of Valain's caste, male and female. They possess a terrifying eroticism that makes them deadly to humans. If a scientist managed to get his hands on one to study, I wouldn't be surprised to learn their skin exudes a pheromone we crave. The perpetual promise of a smile hovers on irresistible lips, below ancient, iridescent, alien eyes. Despite all I've suffered at their hands, I want to rush forward and fall to my knees before them. I want to slide my palms over their flawless skin, discover if they taste as amazing as they smell. I want to be gathered into a fey embrace, yield my memories, my mind, my will, and be carried off to a fairy court, where I could stay forever young, cocooned by illusion. Flanking Vlaine's caste, which I assume is the highest ranking by how the other castes seem to protect it, are the stuff of fairy tales. They're a rainbow-colored, delicate fae that dart like hummingbirds on gossamer wings, silvery nymphs that dance on dainty feet, and others that I can't even see, except for blinding trailers of light they leave behind as they move. They're so brilliant and fiery, they could only be earthbound stars. I scoff at the delicacy of his army. It's ethereal, born to wisp about, seduce, and be served. Mine is earthy, solid, born to gorge, kill, and rule. We stalk toward one another, down a snow-filled street. Where sealy feet touch the earth, the snow melts with a hiss. Steam rises and flowers push up through cracks, blooming brilliantly, anointing the air with the scents of jasmine and sandalwood. The sealy end of the street is bathed in golden light. Where my army's hooves and scaled bellies pass over the stones, a crust of black ice forms. The night embraces us. Stealthy shadows, we ooze forward from the blackness. Only once before have Seely and Unseely met like this, and on that day the Seely Queen died. This is the stuff of legends, never seen by humans, except perhaps in our dreams. Deformed monsters and hideous demons stare with baleful, hate-filled eyes at their perfect golden counterparts. Angels glare with disdain at abominations that should never have been born, who blemish the perfection of the fey race, tarnish their existence simply by being. I wonder what Darok is thinking, bringing them together like this. We stop a dozen paces apart. Ice and heat slam together in the street. My breath frosts the air, then turns to steam as it passes an invisible demarcation. Eddies swirl on the pavement between us, gathering the indigestible rinds of people the shades left behind, and tiny tornadoes begin to form. I realize that whoever began the fairy tale that fae don't feel was selling pure bullshit. They feel the entire range of human emotion. They just handle it differently, with patience born of eternity. Schooled in courtly manners, they don masks of impassivity because they have forever to play out their games. As we study each other through the rapidly growing tornadoes, I remember Vlaine telling me that they destroyed their own world by fighting. It cracked from end to end. Was this why? Will the weather disturbance that's being generated by the clash of these two mighty courts continue to grow if they fight and tear this world apart too? Not that I'd particularly mind, since I intend to recreate it with the book, but I need the book before this world is destroyed. Which means this stormy posturing really needs to stop. Enough with the melodrama, Vlaine, I say coolly. His eyes are those of a stranger. He regards me with the same expression he turns on the monsters at my back. I'm a little irritated to realize he doesn't look at Darok. His gaze slides over him as if he's not even there. He's the fallen fae, traitor to their race, the one responsible for tearing the walls down. I'm just a she-seer trying to survive. The gold-dusted Greek god standing on Vlaine's right sneers.
That thing is the human you said we need to protect. She consorts with abominations.
The gilt-skinned goddess to his left growls. Destroy her now! Hundreds of Seely, walking, dancing, and flying, begin to clamor for my death. Without taking my eyes off them, I snap at Darok. I could really use my spear right now. I assume he still has it, that Vlaine hasn't somehow plucked it from him the same way he takes it from me. As the tiny, dainty fae begin proposing methods for my execution, each one slower and more painful than the last, the god and goddess bracketing Vlaine hammer him.
She is human and has chosen the Dark Ones. Look at how she wears their colors.
You said she worshipped us.
And she would obey us in all things.
They have touched her. I smell it on her skin.
The god looks revolted and aroused. iridescent eyes glitter with gold sparks.
They have used her, the goddess snarls. She is soiled. I will not suffer her at court.
Silence!
Fulain thunders.
I lead the true race for our queen. I speak for Avil.
This is unacceptable.
Outrageous.
Beyond bearing, Fulain.
You will do as I say, Drelia. I decide her fate, and only I will carry it out.
I mutter at Darok. You need to make a decision, and fast.
They always overreact.
Darok murmurs.
It is one of the many things I despised at court. A session in High Council could go on like this for several human years. Give them time. Valaine will bring them to heel.
One of the tiny winged Seelie breaks formation and darts straight for my head. I duck, but it whizzes around me. I'm startled to hear myself burst out laughing. Two more of them break rank and begin to zip tight circles around my head. As they buzz past me, my laughter takes on a hysterical edge. There's nothing funny about what's happening. Still, I hoot and snort. I can't help it. I've never been so amused in my entire life. I hold my sides and double over, chortling, guffawing, choking on sobs of forced gaiety as they weave closer and closer around me. I'm appalled by the sounds coming out of my mouth. I'm horrified at the uncontrollable nature of it. I hate the Fae and their way of stripping away my will.
Stop laughing.
Darok growls. Hilarity has me on the edge of hysterics. And it hurts. I manage to raise my head from my knees just enough to shoot him a dirty look. I'd love to stop laughing, but I can't. I want to tell him to make the damn things go away. Except I can't breathe. I can't even close my lips long enough to grit consonants. Whatever these lovely little silly monsters are, their specialty is death by laughter. What a hellish way to go. After only a few minutes, my sides ache from heaving. My gut burns. And I'm so breathless, I'm lightheaded. I wonder how long it takes to die of forced mirth. Hours? Days? A fourth tiny fae takes up the game, and I brace myself to dive inward. To find a weapon in my dark, lake-filled cave. When suddenly, a long tongue, dripping venom, whizzes past my ear and plucks the dainty Seelie straight from the air. I hear crunching noises behind me. I snicker helplessly.
Fulain!
The golden goddess shrieks.
That thing! That awful thing! It ate Marie!
I hear another snap, followed by more crunching noises, and the second one is gone. I cackle madly. The remaining two retreat, shaking tiny fists and screaming in a language I don't understand. Even angry, the sound they make is more beautiful than an aria. My laughter loses its forced edge. After a long moment, I'm able to relax and I stop making crazed sounds of amusement. Peals fade to moans, to silence. I release my sides and gulp cool, soothing air. I stand, suddenly furious, and this emotion is all mine. I'm sick of being vulnerable. If I'd had my spear, those nasty little death-by-laughter fairies would never have dared approach me. I'd have skewered them mid-air and made fae kebabs out of them. Friends, I hiss at Darok. Trust each other. But he doesn't. I see it in his face. You said you would give it to me so I could defend us. He smiles faintly, and I know he's remembering how Malouche died. Slowly, gruesomely, rotting from the inside out. The spear kills all things Fae, and because Darok has been eating so much unseelie, he's laced with veins of Fae. One tiny little prick of the tip of my spear would be a death sentence.
As yet, we are not under attack.
Who are you talking to, human?
The goddess demands. I look at Darok, who shrugs.
I told you the first Seelie that saw me would try to kill me, hence they do not see me. My princes keep me concealed from their vision.
Now I understand why Valaine's gaze slid over him like he wasn't there. He's not. So it looks like I'm the only one standing here? They think I'm running your army?
Never fear, Shisir,
Valaine says coldly.
I smell the foulness of what was once Fae and now cannibalizes our race. I know who leads this army. As for his being your friend, the one you so unwisely walk with has no friends. He has always served only his own purposes.
I tilt my head. Are you my friend, Valaine?
I would be. I have offered you my protection repeatedly.
The goddess gasps.
You offered our protection and she refused. She chose those things over us.
Silence, Drilia.
The Tua de Danann do not offer twice.
She fumes.
I said silence,
Valaine snaps.
Clearly you do not under...
I gape. Drilia has no mouth. There is only smooth skin where her lips used to be. Delicate nostrils flare beneath ancient, hate-filled eyes. The golden god moves to embrace her. She rests her head in the hollow of his neck and clutches him.
That was unnecessary,
he tells Valaine stiffly. I'm struck by the absurdity of the moment. Here I stand between opposing halves of the most powerful race imaginable. They are at war with each other. They despise each other and are vying for the same prize. And the Seelie, who have enjoyed absolute freedom and power their entire existences, are squabbling among themselves over trivialities, while the Unseelie, who've been imprisoned, starved, and tortured for hundreds of thousands of years, patiently hold formation and wait for Darok's orders. And I can't help but see myself in them. The Seelie are who I was before my sister died. Pink, pretty, frivolous Mac. The Unseelie are who I've become, carved by loss and despair. Black, grungy, driven Mac. The Unseelie are stronger, less breakable. I'm glad I'm like them.
I will speak with the Shisir alone,
Valaine says.
He will not.
Darok growls at my side. Valaine extends his hand when I don't move.
Come. We must speak privately.
Why?
What subtle nuance of the word private do you not understand?
Probably the same subtle nuance of the word no, you never understand. I'm not sifting anywhere with you. The god at his right gasps at my disrespect of his prince, but I see a small smile shape the corners of Valaine's mouth.
Consorting with barons has changed you. I think he will approve.
The name is poison in my veins, from which I will die a slow death every minute I have to spend in this world without him. I'll never be on the receiving end of one of those looks again. Never see that infamous mocking smile. Never have one of those wordless conversations in which we said so much more with our eyes than either of us ever was willing to say with our mouths. Jericho. Jericho, Jericho. How many times did I actually ever speak his name? 3? Barons is dead, I say coolly. The Seelie rustle, murmur disbelievingly. Valaine's eyes narrow.
He is not.
He is, I say flatly. And I'm the queen bitch from hell that's going to make them all pay. The thought makes me smile. He searches my eyes a long moment, lingers on the curve of my lips.
I do not believe you,
he says finally. Darok burned his body and scattered the ash. He's dead.
How was he killed?
He demands. The spear. The soft murmurs swell and Valaine snarls.
I must have confirmation of this. Darok, show yourself.
My sides are suddenly icy. I am flanked by Unseelie princes. Valaine stiffens. The entire Seelie army goes still, and I think Darok may have just started a war. How many hundreds of thousands of years ago did Seelie and Unseelie royalty last look each other in the face? I hate looking at the Unseelie princes. They mesmerize, they seduce, they obliterate. But there is something happening here that no human has ever seen. My curiosity is morbid and deep. I position myself for a better view to see them both at once. The Unseelie prince stands beside me, stunningly naked. Of the four who have been so aptly compared to the four horsemen of the apocalypse, I wonder which two remain. Pestilence, famine, war. I hope I stand next to death. I want to walk with death, bring it crashing down on this immortal, arrogant race. The dark, powerful body, capable of such soul-rending pleasure, is exquisite. I examine every inch with macabre fascination. Even hating the princes as I do, it excites, it thrills, which makes me hate it even more. It turned me inside out. I remember the kaleidoscopic tattoos rushing beneath its skin. I remember the black torque slithering around its neck. Its face has a savage beauty that obsesses even as it terrifies. Its lips are drawn back, baring sharp white teeth. And its eyes. Oh, God, those eyes. I force my gaze to Villain. Then I widen my view to absorb them both, being careful to avoid the Unseelie prince's eyes. Thesis and antithesis, matter and antimatter, they stand like statues, neither moving nor seeming to breathe. They study each other, assess, measure. Prince of consuming night, prince of glorious dawn. The air between them is so charged that I could power all of Dublin if only I could figure out how to plug into it. Black ice rushes forward from the Unseelie prince's feet, encompassing the cobblestones. It is met halfway by a bed of brilliantly colored blossoms. The ground shudders beneath my feet. There is a thunderous crack, and suddenly the cobbled pavement splits jaggedly between them, revealing a narrow, dark fissure. "What are you doing, Darok?" I demand.
"Tell him,"
Darok orders, and the prince opens his mouth to speak. I clamp my hands to my ears to shut out the hellish sound. Villain uses language to communicate with me. All the Seelie have been using my language in my presence. I realize it has been a great concession. The Unseelie princes grant no concessions. Their language is a dark melody that the human ear was not made to hear. Once I was forced to listen helplessly as they crooned to me, and it drove me mad. By the time the Unseelie prince stops speaking, Villain is regarding me with an expression of faint astonishment. Warily, I remove my hands from my ears, but keep them close in case the UP decides to start talking again.
"He claims you killed Barons, Shesir. Why?"
It hadn't escaped me that Villain won't use my name. I suspect that, if he did, those of his race would think him weak. "Who cares? He's dead, gone, out of both of our ways. It's not like you didn't want him dead, too." I wonder if they really burned his body. I will never ask.
"And it was the spear that killed him?"
I nod. I have no idea, but it's simplest to agree. The less time I spend thinking about Barons, the better. He looks from me to the prince at my side.
"And after you killed Barons, you decided your enemy was your friend?"
"A girl needs friends." I'm bored, tired of this posturing. I need to sleep. I need to be alone. "Look, Villain, the Seelie are immortal, and the Unseelie are immortal. What are you going to do? Waste everyone's time beating each other up all night? As far as I know, there's only one weapon here tonight that kills Fae, and I've got it."
"You do not. You do,"
Darok corrects. Just like that, my spear is heavy in my holster. I jerk a hard look his way. About damn time. I guess he finally feels the threat level has risen sufficiently. Or maybe he's bored, too. I slip my hand inside my jacket and close my fingers around the hilt. I love my spear. I'm going to keep it in the new world I create, even though it will be a world without Fay.
You do not,
Valaine says. I thought you couldn't see or hear him.
I smell the stench of him.
My spear is gone. My spear is there. Gone again. I look from Valaine to Darok. Valaine is staring in Darok's general direction. Darok is staring hard at the Unseelie princes. They're having a silent battle over me and my weapon, and it infuriates me that I have no control. One instant Valaine takes my spear, the next Darok gives it back. It flickers in my fingers, solid then gone, solid then gone. I shake my head. This could go on all night. They can play their silly games. I have more important things to do, like get enough sleep so I'm sharp enough to be on the hunt. I'm dangerously exhausted. I no longer feel numb. I'm brittle, and brittle can crack. I'm preparing to turn and walk away from it all when the sound of automatic gunfire shatters the night. The Seelie hiss, and all those capable of sifting vanish, including Valaine, leaving roughly a third of them still standing in the street. They turn on their attacker, snarling. As the bullets hit them, some of the lesser castes flicker and stumble. Others turn toward us and launch themselves into the Unseelie to escape. I hear the voices of Jane and his men, shouting to each other, closing in behind them. I catch the glint of a rifle up on the rooftop, a block down, and no snipers are moving in. Good. I hope they take down hundreds of Fey tonight. Cart them off and imprison them with iron. I hope Danny makes rounds and kills the ones they catch. But I'm not about to die from friendly fire in this screwed-up reality. I have a whole new world waiting for me in the future. I turn to the Unseelie Prince to command it to sift me out of here. My enemy, my salvation. Darok barks a harsh order. The prince's hands are on me, and it's sifting before I even manage to get the words out.
Time is the only true god, and I am forever. Therefore I am god.
Your logic is flawed. Time is not forever. It is always, past, present, and future. There was a time in the past when you did not exist. Therefore, you are not God.
I create, I destroy.
With the whimsy of a spoiled child.
You fail to divine the master design. Even that which you call chaos has pattern and purpose.
Conversations with the Shisadu. 11. I stand on a balcony staring out at the darkness. Snow swirls around my face, lands in my hair. I catch a few flakes in my hand and study them. Growing up in the deep south, I didn't get to see a lot of snow, but what I did see didn't look like this. These flakes have complex crystalline structures, and some are tinged with faint color at the outer edges. Green, gold, dirty like ash. They don't lose cohesion on the warmth of my skin. They're tougher than the average snowflakes, or I'm colder than the average human. When I close my hand to melt them, one of the flakes cuts into my palm with sharp edges. Lovely. Razor snow. More fey changes in my world. Time for a new one. Time. I ponder the concept. Ever since I arrived in Dublin at the beginning of August, time has been a strange thing. I have only to look at a calendar to confirm what my brain knows. 6 months have passed. But of those 6 months, I lost the entire month of September to a single afternoon in Faerie. The months of November, December, and part of January were calendar pages torn from my life while I was in a mindless, sex-crazed oblivion. And now part of January and February had flashed by in a few days while I was in the Silvers. All told, in the last 6 months, four of them whizzed past with me virtually unaware of the passage of time, for one reason or another. My brain knows it's been 6 months since Alina died. My body doesn't believe a word of it. It feels like I found out my sister was murdered 2 months ago. It feels like I was raped on Halloween 10 days ago. It feels like my parents were kidnapped 4 days ago, and I stabbed Barons and watched him die 36 hours ago. My body can't catch up with my brain. My heart has jet lag. All my emotions are raw because everything feels as if it took place over a short period of time. I push my damp hair back from my face and breathe deeply of the cold night air. I'm in a bedroom suite at one of Darok's many strongholds in Dublin. It's a penthouse apartment, high above the city, furnished in the same opulent Louis XIV Sun King style of the house at 1247 LaRue. Darok certainly likes his luxuries. Like someone else I know. New. We'll know again, I correct. Darok told me he keeps dozens of such safe houses and never stays more than one night in any of them. How am I ever going to find them all to search for clues? I dread the thought of remaining with him long enough for him to take me to each for a night. I fist my hands. I can handle this. I know I can. My world depends on it. I unclench my hands and rub my sides. Even hours after the Unseelie Prince touched me, my skin is still chilled in the shape of its handprints. I turn away from the cold, snowy night, close the French doors and scatter my remaining runes at the threshold, where they pulse like wet crimson hearts on the floor. My dark lake promised I would sleep safely if I pressed one into each wall and warded the thresholds and sills with them. I turn and stare at the bed, in the same daze I have been functioning in for the past several hours. I shuffle past it to the bathroom, where I splash cold water on my face. My eyes feel swollen and gritty. I look in the mirror. The woman that looks back frightens me. Darok wanted to talk when we arrived, but I know what it was really about. He was testing me. He showed me pictures of Alina, made me sit and look at them with him and listen to his stories until I thought I might go insane. I close my eyes, but my sister's face is burned into the backs of my eyelids. And there, standing next to her, are my mom and dad. I said I didn't care what happened to them in this reality, because I'm going to make a new one. But the truth is, I'd care in any reality. I've just been blocking it. I will not ask Darok what happened to my parents after I was swept off to the Hall of All Days, and he doesn't offer the information. If he told me they were dead, too, I don't know what I'd do. I suspect this is another of his tests. I will pass it.
That's my girl.
Daddy encourages in my mind.
Chin up. You can do it. I believe in you, baby. Sis Boombah,
he says and smiles. Even though he hadn't wanted me to pursue cheerleading, he'd still driven me to tryouts. And when I'd made the first cut, he'd had one of his clients at Petty Patisserie bake me a special cake shaped like a pair of pink and purple pom-poms. I double over like I've been kicked in the stomach, and my mouth wrenches wide on a sob that makes no sound because I inhale it at the last second. Darok is out there with the princes. I don't dare betray grief. I don't dare make a sound that they might hear. Daddy was my greatest cheerleader, always telling me wise things I rarely listened to and never understood. I should have taken the time to understand. I should have spent more time focused on who I was inside and less on who I was outside. Hindsight, 2020. Tears run down my face. As I turn away from the mirror, my knees go out from under me and I collapse to the bathroom floor in a heap. I curl into a ball, silently heaving. I've held it at bay as long as I can. Grief crashes over me, drowning me. Alina, Barons, Mom and Dad too. I can't bear it. I can't keep it all in. I cram a fist in my mouth to stop my screams. I can't let anyone hear. He would know I'm not what I pretend to be, what I must be to fix my world. There I sat on the couch with him, looking at my sister in all those pictures. And each one reminded me how, when we were little, in every single picture taken of us together, her arm was around me, protecting me, watching out for me. She was happy in the pictures Darok showed me, dancing, talking with friends, sightseeing. He'd taken so many of her photo albums from her apartment, left us with hardly any, as if the paltry few months he'd spent with her gave him more right to her possessions than me, who'd spent my whole life loving her. I hadn't been able to trace my fingers over her face in front of him, because it would have betrayed emotion, weakness. I'd had to lavish all my attention on him. He'd watched me the entire time with those glittering copper eyes, absorbing every detail of my reaction. I knew it would be a deadly mistake, and the last I ever made to underestimate the ancient, brilliant mind behind those cold, metallic eyes. After what seemed like years of torture, he finally began to look tired, yawning, even rubbing his eyes. I forget his body is human, subject to limits. Eating unseelie doesn't keep you from needing sleep. Like caffeine or speed, it wires you hard, but when you crash just as hard. I suspect that's a large part of the reason he never sleeps more than one night in the same place. It's when he's most vulnerable. I imagine it must chafe to have a human body that needs sleep after having been fey and not needing anything for eternity. I decide that's when I'll kill him, when he's sleeping, after I've gotten what I want. I'll wake him, and while he's still feeling humanly muddled, I'll smile and drive my spear through his heart, and I'll say, "This is for Alina and for Jericho." My fist isn't keeping my sobs down. They're beginning to leak around it in soft moans. I'm lost in pain, fragments of memories crashing over me. Alina waving goodbye at the gate the day she left for Dublin. Mom and Dad tied to chairs, gagged and bound, waiting for a rescue that never came. Jericho Barons, dead on the ground. Every muscle in my body spasms, and I can't breathe. My chest feels hot, tight, crushed beneath a massive weight. I fight to keep the sobs in. If I open my mouth to breathe, they'll come out. But I'm waging a hopeless battle. Sob and breathe, or don't sob and suffocate. My vision starts to dim. If I lose consciousness from holding my breath, at least one great cry will explode from me. Is he at my door listening? I dredge my mind for a memory to banish the pain. When I recovered from being pariah, I was horrified to realize that although my time with the princes and afterward at the abbey was blurred, I retained every single memory of what Barons and I had done together in bed in graphic detail. Now I'm grateful for them. I can use them to keep myself from screaming.
You're leaving me, Rainbow Girl.
No, that's the wrong one. I rewind fast. There. The first time he came to me, touched me, was inside me. I give myself over to it, replaying every detail in loving memory. In time, I am able to remove my fist. The tension in my body eases. Warm in memories, my body shivers on the cold marble bathroom floor. Alina's cold. Barron's is cold. I should be cold, too. When I finally sleep, the cold invades my dreams. I pick my way through jagged-edged ravines gouged into cliffs of black ice. I know this place. The paths I walk are familiar, as if I've walked them 100 times before. Creatures watch me from caverns chiseled into the frozen walls. I catch glimpses of the beautiful, sad woman slipping barefoot across the snow just ahead. She's calling to me. But each time she opens her mouth, an icy wind steals her words. "You must," I catch, before a gust carries the rest of her sentence away. "I cannot," she cries. "Make haste," she warns over her shoulder. I run after her in my dreams, trying to hear what she's saying, stretching out my hand to catch her. But she stumbles at the edge of an abyss, loses her footing, and is gone. I stare, stunned and horrified. The loss is unbearable, as if I myself have died. I awaken violently, snapping up from the floor, gasping. I'm still trying to process the dream when my body jerks and begins to move like a pre-programmed automaton. I watch in terror as my legs make me rise, force me to leave the bathroom. My feet carry me across the room. My hands open the balcony doors. My body is propelled by an unseen power into the darkness, beyond the protection of my crimson ward line. I'm not functioning of my own volition. I know it, and I can't stop myself. I'm completely unprotected where I stand. I don't even have my spear. Darok took it away before the prince sifted me out. I stare out at a shadowy outline of rooftops, awaiting, dreading whatever command might come next, knowing I won't be able to refuse subsequent orders any more than I could this one. I'm a puppet. Someone is yanking my strings. As if to underscore that point, or perhaps merely to make a mockery of me, my arm suddenly shoots straight up into the air, flail wildly above my head before dropping limply back to my sides. I watch my feet as they shuffle a cheery two-step. I wish I could believe I'm dreaming, but I'm not. I dance on the balcony, soft shoeing it faster and faster. Just as I begin to wonder if I'm going to be the fairy tale girl that danced herself to death, my feet go still. Panting, I curl my fingers tightly around the wrought iron railing. If my unknown puppet master decides I'm to fling myself off the balcony next, it's in for a hell of a fight. Is it Darok? Why would he do this? Can he do this? Does he have so much power? The temperature drops so sharply that my hands ice to the railing. When I jerk them away, ice shatters and falls into the night below, tinkling against pavement. Small patches of skin from my fingertips remain on the railing. I back up, determined not to commit forced suicide.
Never hurt you, Mac.
The Shisadu croons in my mind. I inhale sharply. The air is so bitterly cold it burns my throat and lungs. You just did, I grit. I feel its curiosity. It doesn't understand how it hurt me. Skin heals.
That was not pain.
I stiffen. I don't like its tone. It is too silky, too full of promise. I try desperately to get to my dark lake in time to arm myself against it, to defend myself. But a wall erupts between me and my watery abyss, and I can find no way around or through it. The Shisadu forces me to my knees. I strain against it every inch of the way, teeth clenched. It whips me around and I collapse onto my back. My arms and legs fly out as if I'm making snow angels. I'm pinned to cold metal girders.
This, Mac,
the Shisadu purrs,
is pain.
I drift in agony. I have no idea how long it tortures me. But the entire time I'm excruciatingly aware of one thing. Barons isn't going to save me. He isn't going to roar me back to reality like he did the last time the book crushed me in the street, the last time it tasted me. He isn't going to carry me back to the bookstore when it's over, make me cocoa and wrap me in blankets. He isn't going to make me laugh by demanding to know what I am, or later cause me to weep when I steal a memory from his head and see him shattered by grief, holding a dying child. While the book keeps me spread-eagled against the cold steel of the balcony floor, while every cell in my body is charred and every bone is systematically crushed one by one, I cling to memories. I can't get to my lake, but I can get to the outer layers of my mind. The Shisadu is there, too, examining my thoughts, probing, learning me, as it said once before. What is it looking for? I tell myself I just have to survive it, that it isn't really harming my body. It's only playing with me. It came for me tonight. I hunt it, and for some reason beyond my fathoming, it hunts me. The book's idea of a macabre joke... It's not going to kill me, at least not today. I guess I amuse. It will only make me wish I was dead. And hey, I know that feeling. Been walking around with it for a while. After an indefinite, endless length of time, the pain finally eases and I'm yanked to my feet. My hands grab the railing and my upper body is contorted over it. I curl my fingers tightly. I lock my legs down. I summon every ounce of energy I have to make my bones whole and strong again. I stare out at the rooftops, fortifying my will. I will not die. If I die tonight, the world will stay the way it is right now, and that's unacceptable. Too many people have been killed. Too many people will continue to die if I'm not here to do something about it. Fueled by the need to defend something greater than myself, I gather my will and launch myself like a missile for the lake inside my head. I slam into the wall the Shisadu has erected between me and my arsenal. A hairline fracture appears. I don't know who's more startled, me or the Shisadu. Then suddenly it's angry. I feel its fury, but it's not angry because I cracked the wall it erected. It's angry for some other reason. It's as if I personally have pissed it off somehow. It's disappointed in me. I find that inexpressibly disturbing. My head is ratcheted around on my spine and I'm forced to stare down. A person stands below me, a dark splash against the brilliant snow, a book tucked beneath its arm. The person tilts its head back and looks up. I chomp back a scream. I recognize the hooded cloak that swirls softly back, teased by a light breeze. I recognize the hair. But I don't recognize anything else because if it really is Fiona, Baron's ex-storekeeper and Derek O'Banion's mistress, she's been skinned alive. The horror of it is that because O'Banion taught her to eat unseelie, she hasn't died from it. Instinct makes me reach for my spear. Of course it's not there.
Mercy!
Fiona screams, her skinned lips bare bloodied teeth. And I wonder, do I have any mercy left in me? Did I reach for my spear because I pity her? Or because I hate her for having had Jericho Barons before me and for longer? The book's anger with me grows. I feel it spilling out, filling the streets. It's immense, barely contained. I'm baffled. Why does it hold itself in check? Why not destroy everything? I would if it would just hold still long enough to let me use it. Then I'd recreate it all the way I wanted it. Suddenly it morphs into the beast, a shadow blacker than blackness. It expands, soars, towers up and up until it's eye level with me. It hangs there in the air, flashing back and forth between its own terrible visage and the meat of Fiona's flayed face. I squeeze my eyes shut. When I open them again, I'm alone. 12.
Stupid feckin' stupid feckers! I kick a can down the alley. It whizzes into the air, hits a brick wall, and flattens into it. And dude, I mean into it. Couple of inches deep. I snicker, knowing somebody'll walk by one day and be like, dude, how the feck did that can get embedded in the wall? Just one more Mega O'Malley mystery. City's full of them. I leave traces of me all over Dublin. My way of saying, I was here. I've been marking it up for years, ever since Rose started sending me out on my own to do stuff for her. Used to stick with little things, like bending sculptures in front of the museum, just enough that I knew they were different, but nobody else would probably notice. But since the walls came down, it don't matter no more. I embed things in brick and stone, rearrange chunks of rubble to spell out Mega, hammer lampposts into twisty D's for Danny, and Dangerous, and Dude. I put a little swagger in my step. Super strength is me. I scowl. Stupid feckin' feckers, I mutter. Hormonal is me. Up one minute, down the next. My moods change quick as my feet fly. One minute I can't wait to grow up and have sex. The next I hate people, and men are people, and... Dude, isn't semen about the most disgusting thing you ever seen? Like, ew, who wants some dude to squirt snot in their mouth? Been on my own for a couple of days now, and it's sweet. Nobody telling me what to do. Ain't gotta go to bed. Nobody telling me what to think. Just me and my shadow. And we are two cool fecks. Who wouldn't want to be me? Still, I worry about those stupid sheep at the Abbey. Feck no, I don't. If they don't want to pull their heads out of their asses, ain't my troubles. Too bad some peeps don't know to take me seriously. Gonna have to mess up the world to get them to see me. Been at Chester's again. Took 7 of the slither effects to keep me out this time. Kept telling him I needed to talk to Ryo, because I think he's their leader when Barons ain't around. And Barons ain't around. Hunted high and low for him last night after my eyeballs got grossed out by Max swapping nasties with the Lord Monster. Dude, what's with that? She could have Valaine or Barons? Who'd want to swap spit with an unseelie eater? Especially the one that caused this whole feckin' mess. Where'd she go for so long? What happened to her? They wouldn't let me into Chester's. A feckin' gin. Getting old, real old it is. Ain't like I want a drink or nothing. Stuff's poison. Just wanted to clue him in. Finally told him to tell Ryo I think Max in trouble. Hanging out with Darok. 2 princes protecting him. Think he's brainwashed her or something. Gotta get her back again. Wanted backup to cover me while I take them all out. Ain't got my she-sheet behind me. Since leaving the Abbey, I'm persona non grovel, and groveling's the only way you get anything from Ro and her herd. Even Joe wouldn't leave the Abbey. Said it's too late for Mac. That's where Ryo was supposed to come in. Told his freaks I was taking the Lord Monster out tonight, and they could help if they wanted. Or not. Don't need nobody. Not me. Mega on the move. Faster than the wind. Leaps tall buildings in a single bound. Dude! Zoom! I study myself in the mirror with cold.